You're listening to the Reinvest Podcast, where each Tuesday we will show you how to reclaim, reconnect, and refocus your life by bringing you the top real estate professionals in the industry. We'll pull back the curtain so you can implement these tools and tactics to build generational wealth. Your hosts, Garrett Gatton and Seth Simonillo. Welcome, welcome to the Reinvest Podcast, episode 53. We've got a great one today. Before we jump into the episode, though, I want to talk about just market dynamics. Seth, us both being full-time realtors, kind of live in it every day. It's a tight market. It's a tight market.
It is, especially locally here. I mean, it just seems like there's no inventory still, even though interest rates are skyrocketing, and you would think somehow we'd catch up, but seems like people are still buying, still can't catch up with demand, and it's propping up prices, and things have not started going down. So I think that's probably somewhat true even in the multifamily realm a little bit, but we have seen a lot more multifamily properties come up.
I'm sure we'll get into this today with our guests here, but I think people are expecting prices to come down, and supply is, you know, that constraint is just kind of keeping things where they are in a gridlock. So we'll talk about the real estate market cycle a little bit later. But to our guests today, we're joined with Christian Osgood and Cody. Give me your last name.
Davis.
Davis, Cody awesome. Davis, both real estate investors. You guys have really popped on the scene here in the last few years. You're off-market deal finders and recently featured on Bigger Pockets podcast episode number 799. Guys, give us a little context, I guess, to maybe share individually, because it's the first time we've done a four-person podcast. So I'm excited to jump into this today. Christian, you go first, and then Cody, just what was your touch point with real estate investing?
My touch point is like, where do we get started?
How'd you get into real estate investing?
Yeah. So I started as a sales rep, trying to save my way to my first few rentals. I'd always wanted to have investment properties since I can remember. That was just my neighbors who had a bunch of money. That's what they did. The guys who made it had a bunch of real estate and small businesses. So I was like, you know what? That's what I want to do. I don't know how to do it. My figuring was, okay, you save a bunch of money, you qualify for a loan, and you go buy real estate. So I went sales career, eventually started working at the CoStar Group. They own apartments.com, LoopNet. Homes.com now, apparently, since I've left. They're now competing with Zillow. But I was working for them in real estate, but not investing in real estate. In 2020, I finally bought my first property. I'd saved up enough, so bought a duplex. Shortly after, bought a second duplex in the same market that Cody invests in, called Moses Lake, Washington. And ran out of money again. And that's where we started partnering with Creative Finance, because I realized, 8-year career got you 4 units. That's not quite financial freedom.
I have no money.
Exactly. Where to proceed? So we learned that. Which transitioned exactly to Cody, who started a heck of a lot younger than
me. So real quick, Cody, before you go, Christian, do you have any contacts at CoStar that you could pull some strings? Because their pricing is ridiculous, and I'm just looking for a discount on our CoStar subscription.
they are a strict no discount company. There is no physical way as a rep to discount anything unless they've changed in the last few years.
Yeah, I don't think they have.
We can verify that.
Our rep came in and he just like gave us a bottle of alcohol and he's like, hey, it's nice that you guys are customers.
My hands are tied. So anyway.
Yep. Not too much you can do as a rep. That's a fantastic product. But yeah, you definitely do pay for it.
Yeah, awesome. We had Crexie try and poach us for like their service, and they had the audacity to say that they are on the same level as LoopNet, and we almost believed them, and then we didn't. So
yeah, anyway. It didn't work out as they had planned. So
well, Cody, what about you, man?
The marketing budget. I do like the fact that Crexie puts all of their they put all the listings online. So like if you're looking at a free site looking for listings, they're going to have more listings than LoopNet does, which I really like. But they can't compete with CoStar's market.
The problem we were running into with them is that their data was not accurate. So we would have information change on our listings and they just didn't have the bandwidth evidently to keep up on that. But anyway. What about you, Cody?
And Cody, you were actually on a Bigger Pockets episode previous to this recent one, right?
We both were.
You both were. Okay.
Oh, wow. Individually.
Yeah, individually. So we both got on one independent of each other. Then we just did one together.
Okay. Awesome.
Yeah, cool. But I got into the real estate space a little younger. I was 18 years old and I was trying to figure out how to save up to buy a duplex. Someone invited me to a real estate page on Facebook. So I joined the page, made a post, and I was working multiple jobs, trying to get more. Wanted to work at Target, Safeway. I was already a gymnastics coach. And I was trying to save up money to buy a duplex at 21 years old. Well, what came out of that is someone said, you should quit those jobs. You should stop going to college, because I had talked to them about that after we
had like good advice so far. Yeah.
Yeah. They said, leave college, quit your jobs, come work for me as a sales guy. You can be a real estate agent and you'll make a lot more money. I was like, well, that sounds really good. So over the course of a few months, I ended up leaving college. I left those jobs, so I had no real source of income anymore. And I was a real estate agent. The only problem was I hadn't made any money. Fast forward 6 months, I had started to realize that if you don't have any clients or any friends or family in real estate, it can be a little difficult if you're an introvert to, in fact, sell real estate to people you don't know.
So who was the guy that told you that you should quit your job and get your realtor's license?
He was just another guy.
He must have been a really good salesman to convince you of that.
Good salesman, bad businessman. There but he's someone that, like, I could name him and nobody that listens to this would know him. Not because they wouldn't know, it's because he's not popular.
Right.
So he's very good at sales, not as great at business. And but what he did teach me was he gave me this little book, and it was Deals on Wheels by Lonnie Scruggs. So I read the book, and it talks about micro lending, micro transactions on mobile homes. Mm. And the big piece was private money. How do you sell or finance things that you buy for very cheap in cash for a premium? So I started learning about that. Meanwhile, there was another broker in the office that had a deal pop up, 20 units seller financed in Moses Lake, hence that market. And so that popped up. And so I started looking into seller financing, started looking to work on some deals. And I looked on the MLS for the seller finance term, found a 12-plex that was listed on the market. It was close to Microsoft over in a little place called Quincy. And when I brought that up to my mentor at the time, he said, what the heck is a Quincy? And so he made me do my market research and figure out what was going on. Turns out it was actually a really great area to be. And So I called him up, offered him seller financing. It was on the MLS. And then shortly after that, closed it. And that was my first deal. So I bought a 12-plex. 9 months later, repeated it with an off-market 12. Then I did it with a 6. A duplex popped up on the MLS right next to my 6-plex. I called Christian and I was like, you need to buy this. And so that we became property neighbors. And then we started partnering on bigger stuff like the 38-plex and the resort and a bunch of other apartment buildings.
So what year was that? You started 2020 or?
2019.
Okay.
That gotcha. Was probably about the time everybody and their mama thought it was a good idea to get their real estate license. So yeah.
Well, I didn't know that it was a good idea. I was just told to do it by some guy on the internet. So
Yeah, anything that follows after listening to a guy on the internet is probably very interesting advice to take and run with. So you guys became, before you became property neighbors, I mean, how did you actually meet?
So we were working at the same firm. So I had left CoStar again, 2020. The whole world shuts down, especially if you're in an area like Seattle.
Yeah.
We hyper shut down. As an outside sales rep for CoStar, not a whole lot of people were buying commercial real estate data at that time, being that no one could enter their commercial buildings. Mm-hmm. I had a lot of clients who were like office owners and gym owners. They're like, well, people are banned from our office. We're not expanding. Gyms were just straight up shut down. So people are losing their business. So people are trying to figure out how to pay their bills. Was not the best job in the world to have for about 2 years. So I exited CoStar 2020, worked for the same firm creating a data product because that's what I knew. I knew data sales. So I got my broker's license, started a 10-person call center with that same business owner Cody was referring to earlier. Different building, same city. So when I was in the office buying my first few duplexes, Cody was the 19, 20-year-old, the guy who started at 19, he was 20 and then turned 21.
That is how aging
that,
works.
That was the order of operations there. But when I first met him, he was that 20-year-old who had bought 24 units by 19. He bought his 30th unit while I was buying my fourth unit. And so he was that really young guy in the office across the street who I've heard a lot about. We actually ended up connecting at Grant Cardone's Growth Con over in Florida.
Oh, yeah.
Owner of the company bailed at the last minute. He had, I think he was buying a house in Texas or something, but he had some project elsewhere, left his room still available. He's like, hey, if you guys want a room together, I got a 2-bedroom. So we ended up being roommates for 3 days, connected on almost everything. The biggest of those being we had a very similar goal. I was trying to retire my wife from teaching because, again, 2020, she's a kindergarten teacher. Teaching kindergartners over Zoom is not like super effective. who would have thought? And so getting her out of her 9-to-5 was really important to me. At the same time, Cody was trying to retire his mother, which had a very similar cost, very similar timeline we were looking for. So when we connected, we had very, very similar goals, wanted to do it through real estate. We got all amped up at Growth Con because it met all the, you know, all the billionaire entrepreneurs. And
10X your life,
where business started.
That's wild. That's wild. I think what's cool about that, though, is, you know, that whole, some of those things are kind of cliche, but the birds of feather flock together. You know, when I think there's a relationship between when you make a decision in your mind, you begin communicating that and kind of putting that out there. You don't realize how there's other people that are like-minded. You're really not the only one, you know, sorry. You're not that special. There's other people that have had those thoughts. And so then you cross paths with those people and that's how those relationships are formed. But that you can't stay under a rock. You can't, you know, it just life doesn't work that way. So one of the things I want to focus in on today, you guys have this very cutting edge thing that you guys are doing called relationship. It's proprietary, you know, very special. And we're going to hopefully pull and demystify that today for the wide world of our audience here. So before we dive into the tactics, talk about your strategy, your approach. I know, Cody, you had said that there were some seller finance deals that's how you really, your first deals were done that way. What was that like? And then how have you guys extracted the principles that you employ moving forward now?
Well, all of my deals, shy of one that I bought with hard money, have been self-financed. The resort, all the apartments, the Airbnb, triplex we got on the water over in Union. I mean, it's all been seller finance. And the thing is, once you've identified what you want, you have to realize someone else has it. That's the simplicity of how everything works. Someone has what you want. It's in your best interest to figure out who that someone is. So the actual overarching strategy is identify the goal, realize who's already hit that goal. I find those people through Google Maps. I want to own apartment buildings. And so my thought was, what better way to find them than finding big roofs on aerial view? Because the bigger the roof, the more likely it is to be an apartment building than a house.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I'm looking in residential areas, the odds are good. It's going to be an apartment versus a 25,000 square foot house. So I look for these big roofs, figure out who owns them on a tax assessor, call them up. And I do the one thing different from everyone else is I don't try and give them an offer. They're not a seller, they're an owner. So what I do is, and now what we do is we reach out to them. Our goal is to book a coffee meeting. And we want to map out a few things, where they were coming from, where they're still looking to go, and what changes for them when they get there. And then we do the same thing for ourselves at the highest level. Like that is how you build rapport. It's how you build a relationship. And we've just done that over and over. And a couple caffeine addictions later, we have some real estate.
Instead of alcohol, that's like a suppressant. You kind of ramp everybody up and get them excited with the caffeine. That's smart. It's smart. So distinguish between, I noticed you really made that distinguishment between seller versus owner. What's the big deal there?
It's how you look at people. If you're being transactional and you're looking at, because this is the normal industry term. You hear people talk about, oh yeah, how do you find these sellers? How do you find distressed sellers? How do you find motivated sellers? It's always, I'm looking for sellers of real estate. That's not what our strategy is about at all. The basic premise basically goes back to what we talked about in Florida at GrowthCon. It's setting your goals, and then it's finding those people who've already done exactly what you want to do in the market you want to do it in. And there are the people to help move you forward. So it's not necessarily that they're going to find you deals. Those people are going to teach you, like in our case, they taught us how to do creative financing. Like they gave us some of our basic principles on cash flow, long-term fixed rate debt. You got to buy everything where you can cash flow. Lever up when you're young in your business, when you're starting, lever up based on cash flow,
right,
hoping for long-term equity growth. But you focus on the cash flow when you're building. The business phases that we have, you have a build phase, a stabilize phase, a optimize phase, and almost everyone that we've learned from has a phase where they actually do pay off all that debt when they build a huge portfolio. You hit a point where you have critical mass and you pay it down.
Right.
But these are all strategies that we've learned specifically from people who've done exactly what we want to do, playing the game. That got us all of our principles and ability to take out transactions. What we basically did was go, hey, if we make five calls, in general, one person will meet with us. So if we do one call a day during the weekdays, mm-hmm, we'll get one coffee meeting every weekend, 52 owners later. You'll find deals when you've talked about your goals and you've learned how they played the game. And now you go in with connections, with knowledge. When you're looking for your property manager, your lawyer, what have you, you have the connections and the strategies by learning from owners of real estate, as opposed to I'm looking for people who want to sell.
So that's the biggest. Were those numbers right? I mean, is that pretty accurate? About 20% of the people that you called said, yeah, let's sit down and get coffee. And I'd love to hear, you know, I'd love to share with you what I know. Or did people feel like it was spammy, or there was this hidden motive of like, okay, yeah, you want to get with me?
I would say almost 100%. I'd say 95% of people will meet for coffee. It's just you take five phone calls to a new person and four of them won't answer. The person who answers almost always meets.
Yeah. I was going to say our average is way higher than 20% of close rate. But
so that's interesting. I mean, do they ever feel like it's a waste of time for them, or are they just kind of like they feel flattered to tell their story, or how's that usually work? Because I feel like high performers sometimes don't want to spend the energy or the time to go to a coffee shop.
The classic pick your brain, like, oh, I don't want my brain to be picked. You know, like we heard that.
And we've heard that from quite a few people too, where like, don't ask me to go to coffee. Like,
right,
I'm too busy for that. And so what have you guys seen?
What we found to be consistently true is there's a point in everybody's life where they realize, like there's a point where it actually happens, and then there's a point where they realize it. They have more money than they have time.
Mm-hmm.
And when they realize that, that's where it flips for the, and we're just speaking in law of averages because not everybody is the same, but most people that we've met with, once they realize that, they want to share their stories and how they did what they did rather than just keep building just to build. We've met people that want to just keep scaling up and scaling up, but more important than that, they want to show people how to repeat it. So they spend all their time just trying to replicate what they did for other people, giving them opportunities. And where I found a lot of the older money was made was through these owner finance contracts. That's how everybody used to play the game. And then they shied away from that when rates got really low.
Mm-hmm.
So like even our CPA was like, you guys aren't special. Everybody used to do this when I was a kid. And I was like, oh, okay.
Well, our CPA is like 70.
Yeah. But you get the point. Now those players they're getting a little bit older. They've realized they've got more money than they have time. And their objective is not just to make more money. They already have more than enough of that resource. If you think about everything as like a resource management game, they want to be able to replicate what they did for other people.
Now, I will say not everybody is that way, but what we're talking about is finding alignment, finding people who are that way. And you can tell in a pretty quick conversation if somebody's like scarcity mindset or abundance mindset.
And the people that we're reaching out to, it's so different than the business model everyone else preaches online. Everybody preaches, look for the overgrown yards, look for the distressed buildings. You don't want to look for that because those people probably don't have money. Mm. They probably haven't made it financially. We want to learn from the affluent people that have done very well in life and in business and with their family. And so what we do is we find the people that have the best yards, the best looking buildings, on the mid-sized apartment complexes because they have disposable cash to keep it up.
Yeah.
Those are the people that are more likely to be of the mindset we're looking for.
And the people who've made it that far in the real estate game typically have done that by being very well connected, which means they are people who take coffee meetings and they love sharing their story. And more often than not, none of their friends or family relate to them in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, that's true.
Multi-hundred unit portfolios. No one cares. They've spent their whole life building this business. We were like, I want to, instead of going, hey, can you sell me your property? It's I'm Christian, trying to retire my wife. I have two duplexes. It's taking forever. You have this 12 unit building. I'm trying to figure out how to scale there.
Yeah.
I admire the business you've built. How did you get started? Like, those are the types of conversations we're having. Mm-hmm. They're going to be much more likely to sit down and tell me how they got started, because I'm not asking for anything from them other than, can you tell me your story? And it's usually a story that 99% of their friends and family don't care about, and they've spent their entire life building.
And when he makes the first outreach, they're like, I'm not selling. Good. I don't have any money. I just spent it on my duplex. It's on Peninsula.
Exactly. Yeah. We're property neighbors. I got two units next to you, but I'm out of cash. Couldn't buy it if I wanted to, unless you have any crazy idea to pull it off.
Yes. But I can't afford coffee.
Yeah.
That was the whole script when we were getting started.
Yeah.
Yeah. And granted, we can afford a little bit more than coffee now, but the nice thing is your story grows with you. So now it's, you know, we're meeting with people who have 1,000 units, and it's, hey, yeah, I've built a 150 unit portfolio. I admire what you've built in 50 years. Here's what I've been able to put together in two. We have a whole lot of creative financing. What are the next steps for me to get to where you're at? Because that's a totally different game than how you get from zero that's to true. 150 units.
That's true. You have to know where you are in your business cycle. I mean, to your point earlier, so you get the coffee meeting. Hey, I want to learn from you. I mean, step one is be sincere in what you're asking, right? It's not like, hey, I want to learn from you and how we can make a deal happen today. You know what I mean? Like, you have to be sincere to listen, and it might not always translate into a deal. But let's say there is somebody who you think has the workings of, I'm a longtime owner, I don't want them the headache of managing anymore, I've got a large tax basis in the property. So how do you transition from, I want to learn from you, to, hey, I would be interested in buying some property from you?
When you've built up rapport, we've got our little circle drill that we've developed over the past couple of years, but you've got three sectors, and that leads into your question. And you got relatable points, which is your past, which got you ultimately to the table with these people. People will meet with you based on their ability to relate to you. The big thing, like, we have an objective going into every meeting, and we have a takeaway coming out, because that keeps us highly intentional. Our objective is to map out the circle for them and for us. And the reason why is people work with you based on the goals that you set. It is so important to not focus on any relatable points during the meeting, but focus on the objectives. Mm. Like, what were they trying to do? What was their original objective? And then that can relate to, what is your objective? And when you're wrapping up the meeting, what we've done is, when we mapped all these out, and the last one's significance, what changes for them when they hit their goal? You bring that up because it's emotional, and that's like a release of energy that they get to give to very few people in life.
Mm-hmm.
But once you've shared your goal, what you're trying to accomplish, and you've gotten through their circle drill, you've built rapport. And once you've built rapport, you can ask the question of, how would you recommend I go about doing something similar? Oh. We never pitch people to sell to us. They pitch us for us to buy their stuff.
So let's say you get to the coffee table after, out of 10 meetings, how many times out of those 10 meetings does it, do you leave it at like, hey, let's keep in touch, I'd love to continue to learn from you, and there's something actionable that comes out of it?
Out of all the original meetings that I booked in Central Washington, I bought from all but two.
Wow. That's wild. That is wild.
And one of them is writing us a check for a lot of money to buy a deal together. So it's like, we not only did we not buy a deal from them, but we're going to buy a deal with them.
Interesting. So, and this is what I love. This is what we're going to kind of title this podcast episode: Relationships are the currency to buy real estate, not money. Relationships are the currency to buy real estate, not money.
Especially if you don't have money. Very important.
Right, right. And so we have a buddy of ours who's a chiropractor, and he had made this statement probably in relation something to chiropractic related. But he said, constraints breed creativity. So when you're constrained, I don't have a lot of money, you got to get creative. And so you got to figure out, how do I still accomplish my goals? It's that whole classic, it's not this or this, it's this and this. How do I make both work? And it sounds like you guys have done that. And then now you're starting to articulate it so that you can help other people replicate that as well. So before we go into our smaller pockets, give us a case study, a real example of how this has played itself out, maybe on a recent deal, I'll leave it up to your guys' discretion of something where you kind of took this full cycle, this model that we're talking about.
I think a good example, and I'll do this out without any specific names, but it, just because it's real time, what we're working on right now, it's a relationship that Cody had called on, what, 3-4 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
Way too small. This is an owner at safely over $100 million of real estate, a larger owner in the market that we operate in.
Very low leverage point.
Mm-hmm. And so when he first connected as a 19, 20-year-old, hey, I'm trying to get started. It didn't make sense with that owner to do anything with Cody because Cody just wasn't big enough to deal with any of the transaction size or business cycle that he was in the middle of. He's just a much larger fish, has hotels and large multifamily all over the place. Nice stuff, rundown stuff. Yeah, he has everything. He just holds a ton of stuff.
He's got a hotel as big as our whole portfolio, dollar size.
Yeah.
Wow.
He's just a big fish.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Now, fast forward a few years later, where we have 150 units, we're trying to figure out how to scale. We're now starting to take out some of the assets that the same guy is competing for. We hit a market cycle where interest rates doubled. We have a ton of equity in real estate. We built a lot of equity in real estate in a very short period of time. When rates more than double, it's very hard to pull that out. So we hit a crunch where like we have great cash flow.
Mm-hmm.
We have fantastic equity and talk about resource management. We have low liquidity, which we started with. There was never a opportunity to pull that money back out. So this individual right now is going to buy into one of our deals, just one of the deals to get us liquidity, which gives us enough liquidity to go 50-50 with him on a bigger project. So he's basically 33-33-33. Even partnership on another project and continue to expand.
Wow.
So that's a good example of you build these relationships.
Yeah.
There's all these times where we could have tried to just buy something from him because we built the relationship. The opportunity that presented itself was not something I would have expected in a million years. I would have never expected to partner with him on a deal we'd already done. And I wouldn't expect that to be the key to unlock a new larger deal with a ton of upside. Dude. It's a hotel conversion, which he's done a ton of times and we've never done.
Nice. Yeah. This is so good. So you guys earlier said, hey, these people are owners, not sellers. And if you focus in on the seller, you kind of get very narrow-minded, boxy in the way that you're approaching that. So you took a guy and said, we value relationship, and it didn't turn anything, but you kept at it. And so now he is both buyer and partner for you guys, which it evolved into something way more than him being a seller, all because of relationship. It gave kind of the environment for it to provide a lot of latitude for what that could become.
Correct. I mean, there's only a few opportunities in business where you get to restructure, and that's one way you can restructure is with new relationships.
Yeah.
You get to play with the pieces on your board, if you like board games, and if you can use other people's pieces if you sit next to them. You just have to get to the table.
Well, I think it shows the long-term nature of how you guys approach things, because that was 3 to 4 years in the making. And you could have said, oh, I'm way too small. He's way too big. He turned me down, and think that it wouldn't resurface or turn into something. But, you know, you kept that going. And obviously you're in a different position now than you were then. And you got his attention. I'm sure it didn't feel good when he realized that he lost a couple of deals to you guys. that probably got his attention. So,
yeah. And you know what? I found that was the main reason that he wanted to join forces. He's like, I'm just impressed. He's like, there's not a lot of people who actually come into the market and do it. Like, people buy one or two deals, right? But in our market, we've done probably 12 to 15 deals.
Yeah.
He's like, you've done this over a sustained period of time. You've consistently competed. He's like, I've gone from being, you know, mildly amused to like, I'm very impressed with what you guys built. It's a much different place. He's like, you guys are doing the types of things that I did when I was your age. And he's a little bit older. He's in his 50s. He's like, this is fun. He's like, I love what you guys are doing. This reminds me of who I was when I was younger.
Yeah, you earned respect.
Yeah, but that doesn't happen instantly. And if you go after them again as sellers, we absolutely could have bought buildings from him. There was a 32 unit opportunity we could have bought. There was an 8-unit opportunity we could have bought. We opted not to do those.
And they were seller financed. Like low to no money down on both of them.
Wow. And one of them in particular probably would have been a very, very good deal. Just would have been a hard project. It was the wrong time. So they're deals we didn't do. And because we just focused on the relationship, the pieces ended up being something totally different. If we approached any of these relationships differently than we did, we would probably have, I don't know, 80, 90 multifamily units. Nearly as many relationships. We'd have no resort. There are a whole bunch of things that we've taken out that we just wouldn't have got if we didn't have long-term relationships that were focused on learning instead of just buying.
So one question I have for you guys, I've been listening to David Goggins' Audible book, You Can't Hurt Me. And I've been going through this kick of just these guys who are just savages, you know, just grindstone kind of guys, big, just knuckle draggers, really hard dudes. And all for the purpose of that kind of that mindset and how important that is. And one of the things that he mentioned in his book is he said, people want to come up to him. And if you don't know much about David Goggins, he's done endurance races. I mean, galore. Like, he went through Navy SEAL training 3 times and finished the 3rd time with broken shins, like just disgusting stuff. And so people would come up to him and they would try to make excuses as to why he was able to do those things. And they'd say, well, that's because you're just, you know, you're so strong or you're athletic or you're so gifted. And it would almost as a way to alleviate their ability to do, like it was a way to make themselves feel better that they hadn't done those things. So my question is, have you guys had people come up to you and almost try to make it like a unique thing that no one else can replicate because they haven't done it? Or do people feel empowered by what you've done? I mean, what's that been like?
Without a doubt. Like, that's happened multiple times in my career. And I think less so to Christian, because he's more relatable, having done it closer to his 30s. But we would have coffee meetings where I would leave the room and someone would make a snarky remark about how it wasn't repeatable to do what I did. It was cool, but it wasn't repeatable for everyone else. And then I'd get back and they'd pretend like nothing happened, or they said nothing about it. And Christian would tell me after the fact. I was like, fine, never meet with them again.
And why did they think it wasn't repeatable?
Well, the people think that you can't just go buy a 12-plex, zero money down, seller financed at 19 with no relationships or no family or friends in the business. They just don't think it's possible. Mm-hmm. Instead of giving into that, I already know it's possible. I already did it a couple times. Someone found us. They were 18 years old. They saw us online and they reached out and like, hey, I'm just trying to figure out how to do this. Me and my buddy want to buy some properties together. And they saw themselves as us. And they were 18 at the time. By the time they were 19 years old, they'd bought a couple of rentals. They were up to 28 apartments, seller finance, zero money down. And they bought it in Texas. They lived in Cali. They tried it in Nevada. Didn't work in Nevada super well because there wasn't a lot of stuff trading where they wanted to buy.
Right.
And so what they did is they started looking in Texas. So they bought a seller finance, zero money out of pocket, 10-plex. They bought an 8-plex and they bought another 10.
Wow.
And just like that, instead of letting other people say, well, that's not possible, we just replicated it with someone that bought more real estate than I did at a younger age than I did.
Right.
Well, he's closing out a 25 unit right now. His name's Caleb Hommel, by the way. He's fantastic. Awesome. But he's going to buy another 25. I'm sure he'll do another deal this year. But realistically, he's going to get pretty close to 100 units in his first 2 or 3 years of investing.
That's awesome. That's so awesome. You know, I think one of the reasons people do that is because it's hard work. It'd be easier to say, well, you're just talented or you're just good with people. Really, it's just anybody can work hard, but that's the fall off, right? We kind of want the solution that's easy and palatable. It's like, no, you got to grind. You're on the phone. Building relationships with people is hard. It's hard work. It's not very linear, you know, because it's you have to move at a different speed and actually set their needs ahead of your own. So
that's we're gonna jump into our smaller pockets segment here. So why don't you go ahead and tell us about one of your worst deals, a deal that went wrong, a deal that fell apart. What happened, and then what did you learn from it?
So we haven't had any deals necessarily go wrong. We're very, very, very careful on how we structure everything. And that's the nice piece with creative finance is that you get to dictate all of the terms, the price, the term, the interest rate. So it's easier if you know what you're doing to not do a bad deal. That being said, we've had partnerships that haven't worked out perfectly. One of the things that we try very hard
to that.
Yeah, we try very hard not to invest with friends and family. And one of the earlier deals we did was with someone who was a childhood friend of mine. And the deal has done perfectly fine. We bought it. It's a like a $1,000,001 purchase price, 3% interest rate, 4.5% down. It's $50,000 down to buy $1,000,001 in real estate.
Whoa, that's wild.
Yeah, so the deal is phenomenal. The partnership has been rough. The lender, who was that friend's father, disagreed on a bunch of stuff in the contract that's just not in there.
He was just wrong.
He was just blatantly wrong, but wanted he had trouble accepting that he didn't own the deal. So when we would renovate things on a different schedule, be like, oh, I'm calling the note due if you guys don't do this. I'm like, that's, first of all, completely illegal.
He sent us the wrong notices, and then his attorney was like, yeah, you have a hard case. But you get the idea. He was not the professional in the space.
Man.
And because it was a childhood friend's father of Christian, that didn't go well.
It was just super uncomfortable and unnecessary. Yeah. So that was really where we learned money will change your relationships. It's one of my favorite things about our partnership. We started as business partners. Now we're very close friends. Money has always been a part of that relationship. So it doesn't change things when we have ups or downs or things are easy or hard. Right. It doesn't matter because money's always been involved. When you introduce money into an existing relationship, in this case, someone who I've been friends with for 15 years.
Yeah.
Longer, 20 years.
Yeah, it's new waters.
Exactly. It's like, oh, this is different. And like that was just really uncomfortable because now it's like, okay, well, I feel bad for him. He's like, this is my first piece of real estate. Yeah. My father's telling me one thing. Your lawyer's telling me something else. This isn't fun at all. It really is uncomfortable. So it's one where we've navigated. We've made it through. But the lesson there of just like, if you have friends or family, don't, even if they have money, don't go into business with them if you're not willing to change the relationship.
Right. Yeah. Right. It's recognizing that's the relationship wise. Will change.
So you're and sometimes for the better. I have friends who went into business together and the it's been really successful. They're super happy. They've taken off. Their friendship grew, but it also changed. It's not what it was. It's better, but it had a significant change. And alternatively, it could make your relationship a lot worse. So you just have to accept the relationship I have now will be something else if we introduce money. And if you're not willing to change a relationship, don't partner with that person.
So you still have that deal and your friend's dad's still the note holder?
Yep. And everything's going great. And he's getting paid every month on time, like he always has.
Nice.
and the note hasn't come due.
He just had to take the adjustment of, I need to sit down and accept my money.
Yeah.
He's paid monthly and he does not want to call that note due because he does not want, he specifically does not want to deal with the capital gain. So when we were talking about potentially selling it, his immediate thing was, oh, can I pass this note to the next person?
When he was trying to call a due.
Yeah. He was bluffing with calling a due. But
you have Uncle Sam in your corner.
Yes. Yeah. There's a certain amount when you sell a property that we didn't expect to be an issue. But sometimes with sellers, it's like they have an emotional hurdle to get over of, I'm still invested in the property. Like my note's backed by that property, but I'm not the owner anymore. And that was hard for, I think that was hard for him to accept. Is like, they're going to run this differently than I would. And I think we've run it a lot better. But of course he didn't see it that way. He thought,
well, egos are a real thing. You know, like it's tough to, you know, come face to face with, and I would imagine that's probably a normal challenge with some sellers is when they hold the paper, they're obviously still watching the property get operated and they have to be okay with things running different. And that can be, there can be a disconnect there.
Yeah, that's why we like working with the more experienced owners. A more experienced owner is going to be way less emotional because it's been their business for a long time. When you're working with a smaller owner doing seller financing, that does come up more often because it's like it's a very significant percentage of what they've built throughout their lifetime.
Oh, yeah, right.
That you have a 30-year-old and a 20-year-old coming in and
running.
Like,
it.
All right, we're taking it on and we're scaling, and it's. I can imagine that's hard to watch from the sidelines.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, good deal. We're going to go into our last show segment here called our little nugget. So guys, what's one practical takeaway? I'd like to hear one from each of you. A piece of advice, could be a hack, something or more foundational that our listeners can take away and apply to their businesses.
to the extent that you can simplify your universe, it becomes repeatable. And if it's not repeatable, it's not worth anything.
So if you're building some Yoda stuff there, repeat that again.
Yeah. To the extent that you can simplify your universe, it becomes repeatable. And if it's not repeatable, it's not worth anything.
Mm, wow. Wow. And you guys are in that mode right now where it's like, we're going to keep it stupid, simple. You know what I mean? Really scale.
I don't know that we're going to kiss, but we will keep it simple.
That's
the risk of the dual podcast. <That's right. laughs> You got to watch your analogies.
That's true.
But yeah, no, keep it extremely simple. There's so many different ways you can play the creative game. And I've seen people complicate it so much where it's like, yeah, you close the deal, but you could never do that structure again. Feasible. Like you're looking for people look for these unicorn deals. And it's like, look at what does work.
Right.
Long-term cash flowing fixed rate debt, which was going to be my piece of advice is if you can negotiate any debt product, the power of that debt product is based on the longevity that you have it. Because if you have this amazing debt product and you cash flow for 2 years, then your notes due, it's like, cool. It's not worth all that much.
Right.
Yeah.
People over focus on how am I going to close this deal? They don't focus on how am I going to never lose it?
Yes.
And so if you can go into everything, and it's not that you're not allowed to sell. It's that you should never be in a position where you have to sell to make your business run.
That'll preach. Cause right now, a lot of operators are going through that very thing where they're like, we closed the deal in 2020, 2021, but we've got a balloon. You know, how are we going to keep the deal? And people are getting sweaty on answering that question. So absolutely. What's been one of the greatest resources for your guys' real estate investing careers?
The relationships that we've made along the way.
Somehow I had a feeling you were going to say that.
This stuff isn't in a book. There's information where people go get a whole bunch of info. They buy a bunch of courses or watch a bunch of YouTube. You can do YouTube University and learn a whole bunch. Right. That's great. In theory, you're an expert. But when it comes to actually making this stuff happen, these people don't know anything. So the people that are going to be able to teach you how to do what you want to do are the people that have already done it. And we've just found that to be the number one resource. And they're just people that own a bunch of stuff on the magical map of Google Maps.
Right. Very good. That's awesome. Good. What about you, Christian? Would you rehash that or would you add anything to that?
I mean, hands down, it's the most valuable piece. I can't say anything other than that. It's the relationships. Like we bought this awesome resort and it's from a buddy who we met on YouTube as a totally different investment strategy. He just referred it to us because he's like, you guys are young and have the energy to do a big project. We have the stories that we've shared here. Like we picked up deals we've learned from friends and family, but those lessons we learned on a small deal helped us avoid mistakes down the road. The investors we get to invest with now play at the $100 million level. We're able to do that because we spent multiple years building those relationships. So every single level, one of the big things is the steps that you take to get to point A are usually not the same steps you take to get to point B. You meet different people along the way and their lessons hit you at different times in your business cycle, but continuing to always put the relationships first and map out what are my goals and who has done what I want to do in my market. If you just keep doing that, we have found that we've gotten a lot of ground in 2 years of partnership. I mean, I went from 4 units to like 150 and we're still growing rapidly. So I have found that it's worked to get this far and we'll have to touch base in a year or two and see where we get continue to do the same thing for another few years.
Yeah. So, and that's a great segue into how can people follow your guys' success and support what you're doing or be a part of what you're doing?
Yeah, we post a lot of videos on Cody and Christian Multifamily Strategy. That is our YouTube channel. And if folks want to get a little deeper dive and be a little bit more intimate as far as getting on actual Zoom calls, multifamilystrategy.com is the place to go.
Awesome. Yeah, nice. We'll put those links in our show notes here so people can access that. And then just in closing, this is a great way to kind of end the episode. How close are you guys to retiring your wife or your mother? Kind of in that goal that you guys set out.
When our taxes get filed, our CPA's had a little bit of health troubles, but in all seriousness, when those get filed, he can buy his house in Texas and his wife already retired.
Nice.
Then I can buy my mom the condo I wanted to buy her. I won't be paying cash, but she'll get to live there for free.
Wow.
And then she can do what she wants when she wants.
Yeah. My wife retired in the first
11 months. We had a 2-year reminder that we were retiring his wife by a certain date, and it popped up the other day.
Dude, wow. That's so cool. That is so cool.
Congrats.
Well, that is a great way to land the plane here, guys. Thank you so much for your time and unfolding some of this stuff for us. It's been awesome.
All righty. Thanks
for having us.
As always, excited that you joined us on another episode of the Reinvest Podcast. If this episode added to your tool belt or left you feeling inspired, go ahead and share it with a friend. Stay tuned every Tuesday for new episodes. And if you want to get in touch with us, go to our LinkedIn or Facebook profiles and shoot us a message. Move farther, reach higher, and grow deeper. See you next time.